Good to see everybody. It is time to start. This morning we're going to continue with our topic of the influence of a woman. And lesson five, as it says on the screen, we have three we're going to discuss today. And as I mentioned when we started this class, one of the objectives is to really think about these characters. Real people. We have revealed through the scripture little snapshots of their lives. It's not a novel. We don't have all the details. We have just little bits and pieces of these stories as it relates to the bigger picture of God's plan of salvation. So that being said, they were real people. They did have their own motivations, their own challenges, and we don't always know the full story. I'd like us to think about these characters, though, in these situations, and maybe contemplate them and what is their motivation that these people were having to make difficult choices, and by doing that, maybe get a better appreciation for the Bible and how real this all really is. Sometimes, especially in the little kids classes, we talk about these characters and these stories almost like fairy tales. We don't present them that way, but these are some incredible things that are going on in the world back then, and they can be kind of detached from reality. So I'd like for us just to kind of refocus on these people as real people. And we also mentioned that there'll be some speculation as we go through this class, because we don't have all the answers and we don't understand all the details of these stories, and we have to be careful with the speculation that we don't get to the point where we're putting more into the story than is there, and we're being adamant about our own interpretation of these events when there's not a lot revealed. So this morning's lesson is probably going to be about as far out there with speculation as we're going to go. The rest of the lessons, I think there's a lot more revealed for us to draw from. So that being said, as we discussed today, if you disagree with some of my speculation, I'm going to try to make sure I explain exactly what the story reveals and then what I think perhaps is behind some of these decisions, actions, motivations. And you may disagree, and that's fine. So today we're starting with the life of Moses. The account of the Exodus tells us the background for the birth of Moses. And we find in Exodus chapter 1, verses 8 through 10 is some of that background. So Exodus 1, 8 through 10. Now a new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph. And he said to his people, "Behold, the people of the sons of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come, let us deal wisely with them, lest they multiply, and in the event of war, they also join themselves to those who hate us and fight against us and depart from the land." So this is the world that Moses' mother, Jochebed, finds herself. We see in chapter 2 that this woman, living in these difficult times, has a male child at the time when the Pharaoh has decreed that male children will be thrown into the Nile, just to try to limit the number of Hebrews in the land. Now, we find through other information that by now she's had two other children. She has a daughter, Miriam, and a son, Aaron. So Moses is the third that we know of. Her name, by the way, Jochebed, means Yahweh. Yahweh is glory. So it seems that her parents were aware of God and were honoring God, at least through the naming of their daughter. But we would imagine also, if they knew God and wanted to honor God, they raised her to know God and to know God who brought them to Egypt in the first place. She was aware of God. So when she has this child, she's not willing to let him be thrown into the river. She tries to hide him, but that only is going to work for about 3 months, we read. At the point of 3 months, she decides hiding him is no longer going to work. So her new scheme is to put him in this basket that she's made, and she's waterproofed it. She puts it in the Nile, the very river that Moses was supposed to have been thrown into. She hides him there in the river in this basket. For reasons we don't fully understand, his sister Miriam watches over the basket from a distance. Pharaoh's daughter finds the basket in her bathing place. And Moses has a secret weapon when he's confronted with Pharaoh's daughter. What's his secret weapon? Anybody pick up on this? What's that? In the verse there, it talks about he was crying when she discovered him, and she took pity. But earlier we learn he's a very beautiful baby. And it's multiple places in the scripture talks about what a beautiful baby he was. Stephen talks about it when Stephen is giving his account to the Pharisees before they murder Stephen in the book of Acts. Hebrews mentions that he was a beautiful baby. It's given in the Exodus account. So babies have that weapon at their disposal. I'm looking at Caleb sitting over here. Babies are cute. And we have this soft spot in our hearts for babies. A beautiful baby, maybe even more. And then you add the fact that he starts to cry. Pharaoh's daughter was moved at finding this baby. And so that's when Miriam comes up and suggests, you know, if you want that baby, I know where I can get a nurse for the baby. And so, of course, Miriam takes Moses back to the mother, and things progress from there. Eventually, Pharaoh's daughter names Moses. That's the name she gave him. We don't know what his name was prior to that. Verse 10 in chapter 2 of Exodus, as we read, the child grows. How long does Moses spend being nursed by his mother? Did Miriam take Moses back to Jochebed? Jochebed nursed him and sent him right back, and that was the end of the transaction between the Pharaoh's daughter and Jochebed? Is it a one-time deal? No, the implication here is she is going to continue to nurse this child until the point where he no longer needs the nursing. So, for the Hebrews at this time, that's 3 to 4 years of nursing. So there is some time here, and many believe the Hebrew history is that he lived back with Jochebed during these times until he was weaned, and then he went to live with Pharaoh's daughter. So that's 3 to 4 years of time spent with his mother that he obviously would not have had if Miriam hadn't have acted. Did I miss anything so far in the story? Okay, I want to skip over to Hebrews real quick and put a little bit more context on this before we start answering questions. Hebrews 11, starting in verse 23. And this is a summary of that same account given here. Hebrews 11:23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents, because they saw he was a beautiful child. And they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking for the reward. Okay, so that's interesting because it lays out clearly that Moses was making a conscious choice when he left Egypt. It's not a matter of circumstance that he was accused of murdering an Egyptian and ran for his life. That happened, obviously. But this account tells us there was more to it than just that, running for his life. He had made a decision. He'd rather be part of this Hebrew culture than the Egyptian. And it talks about the motivation being a godly motivation here, which I think is really interesting, given the opportunities that Moses had in the house of Pharaoh. Okay, so all that being said, that's the story, and we're going to answer the questions in the table based on that. What's the relationship? And this is now at the top of the page. It's between Jochebed and Moses here. Relationship between the influenced individual, mother, son. Was the relationship between the two short term or long term? Okay, it would have normally been long term. What do they end up getting time frame together? Okay, yeah, we're pretty confident in their 3 to 4 years. Beyond that, was there contact between Moses and his family while he was living in the house of Pharaoh? Okay, so we don't know precisely how much contact he had with family, but he grew up knowing he was a Hebrew. He's aware of his siblings as well. Yes, Raul? Okay, that's certainly what the Jewish tradition is, that he had a relationship with Aaron and Miriam during that time. And we find out later when Moses is 80 years old and he's at the burning bush, and Moses is trying to negotiate his way out of the responsibility that God is giving him. Eventually, God gets angry with Moses and says, "Well, I know your brother Aaron is able to speak. So we'll use him." And it's not as if Moses says, "I had a brother." In fact, Moses is already on his way to meet, Aaron is already on his way to meet Moses at that time. So I think there's enough here to be able to say there is some knowledge of his family and his siblings, and likely his mother had some kind of role as he grew beyond those first 3 to 4 years. But we just don't know. Any other thoughts on that? So for those who don't hear on the live stream, Ricardo's pointing out that Hebrews talks about his faith, which implies that there's knowledge there for him to act on, to him to demonstrate that faith. And so the knowledge had to be about God and was passed on somehow to him. And likely, I think it's likely that his mother had those 3 to 4 years, and I would expect use them wisely in training her son about her faith, and then may have had influence beyond that. So that's my answer to that simple little box question, short term or long term. Overall result, positive or negative for Moses? Positive, clearly. I think he's given a good grounding in his faith by his mother. Method of influence, how did she influence him? Anything in the scriptures that tells us? Yeah, Aaron's going to be the first. Yeah, her son Aaron. So that's where all that priesthood's going to come from. we don't know precisely how she influenced, but certainly her life or demonstration of love and devotion to God is demonstrated. So that's likely. Melanie points out that it specifically states that he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, and he's somebody's son. So he had an attachment, likely to his mother, in that role. Okay. Any other thoughts on that method of influence? I mean, you can imagine a mother and a young child teaching about God just in the home through her daily actions. It's just, you can imagine a devout Hebrew woman just working with her children and Moses being a part of that. Okay, the impact of the influence. If we assume, that is, that Miriam had some influence on his decision to identify as a Hebrew and not as an Egyptian, what's the impact? Yeah, that's really, I think, the impact is he's choosing to be mistreated with his fellow Hebrews as opposed to taking part in all the pleasures of the Egyptian. And we don't know what that meant day to day for him. I can't imagine as a 10-year-old he wouldn't eat the things at the table of Pharaoh. I'm sure he did. But at some point, he makes the decision to live as a Hebrew and not as an Egyptian. So we don't have a lot of great information, but you know, you can imagine as he's getting older, maybe late teens, in his 20s, he's starting to feel this pull away from the Egyptians. So that was probably difficult, I would imagine. Hebrews make that very clear. He's making a spiritual choice here. That's right. He was educated, right. The best education that Egypt had, that's right. Okay, was the influence the result of a conscious effort? Is she purposely trying to influence her son? Yeah, all moms do. I mean, that's what moms do when they teach their children. They're trying to be influential. So I would say yes here. Was this instance part of a larger pattern of influence? Can you call 3 to 4 years teaching a pattern? If you can, then yes. If you don't think there's enough time, then no. This one's a little bit. Yeah, I'm sure she realized she had limited time with Moses. She did not know what was going to happen to him when he was turned over to Pharaoh's daughter. So she probably maximized her influence during that time. Was Moses aware of the effort to influence him? He's just a child being raised by his mother, so I don't know that there's anything there that he was aware of, any effort to influence him in a way that he didn't understand. Would Moses have been better off or worse off without the influence? Who says worse? Julie? Why? Okay. Yeah, but he would have been in Pharaoh's household as an Egyptian. That would have been pretty great. Okay. Yeah, from a worldly perspective, it may have been better to stay in Pharaoh's household, but from a spiritual perspective, obviously, this worked out much better for him. Speculation again here. What would have been the result of the situation without the influence? What if Moses was discovered by Pharaoh's daughter, and she takes him to the palace, and that's the end of the story for Jochebed? would this have turned out differently? Okay. Okay. Antia is saying that God would have completed his mission. We don't know how, and so may have been through Aaron, she speculates. Ricardo? Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. Children are very influential at that young age. So. Okay. Anyone else want to speculate, or is that too far out there? Yes, Rob? So Rob points out it's quite possible that because the Egyptians were so anti-Hebrew, they may not have allowed Moses to participate fully within the household. But it may have been obvious that he wasn't an Egyptian growing up. Even though he was in the household, he wasn't treated as a full family member. Let's talk about Pharaoh's daughter for a second. She's not one of the people on our list today. But while Rob brings it up, it got me to think about this question I had written to discuss. What was Pharaoh's edict concerning the Hebrew boys? What were they supposed to do with the Hebrew children at this time? Throw them in the Nile. Okay. So imagine for a minute, you're at home when Pharaoh's daughter comes in this day that she's found Moses. And she says, "Hey, I've got a baby boy that's going to be mine." And Pharaoh says, "How is this possible? Well, I found a Hebrew child floating in the Nile. And I worked it out where I'm going to raise him as my own." And Pharaoh says, "Wait a minute. My command was to throw the Hebrews in the Nile and drown them. And now you're pulling them out of the Nile and bringing them into my house?" Can you imagine there needing to be some influence on her part in order to make this happen? You think the Pharaoh initially was going to, "Oh, great, yeah, the Hebrew child in the household, that sounds good." It goes against everything that he was trying to accomplish, and yet, eventually, he allowed it to happen. So I think there's some influential nature within Pharaoh's daughter here to get this to... Lauren? Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah. Daughter, Lauren points out daughters can be extremely influential with their fathers, whether it be a puppy or it turns out even maybe a baby. She wanted this and it happened even though it was counter the king's... It wasn't like it was some kind of parliament decision to throw the Hebrew babies. It was Pharaoh's command to do this. Turns out this policy was very short-lived. It didn't go on very long. And you just have to wonder if maybe Pharaoh's daughter, by bringing Moses in and having this conversation, perhaps, we don't know, speculation here, perhaps she was influential in getting this policy ended. And again, that's speculation. But because it was so short-lived, it's possible that she was working after this discovery of this beautiful baby, that, you know, this is a horrible policy. Perhaps she was able to exert some influence. And Tia? Okay, so Antia speculates that perhaps Pharaoh didn't know it was a Hebrew child, which is possible. I can't argue that that's not the case. It's possible. It's possible. That's not how I see it, but But it's possible. There's no way of knowing based on the account we have that wasn't the case. Anybody else before we keep moving? Okay. So what's some takeaways from this story between Moses and his mom? Teach your children while they're young, obviously. Yeah, the influence of a mother here, it seems to be an example where mothers are incredibly influential, even with young children. We can 100% ascribe all of Moses' decisions to his mother's teaching, but certainly she played a part, and I think that's a great takeaway. The power of a mom is just about unparalleled in human relationships. Any other takeaways? That's the big one I had. And so moms, be aware of this power. And she knew she had a short amount of time to work with Moses. The rest of us just don't know. So use those opportunities wisely as we have them, right? Okay? Oh, no, you're just waiting. Okay. Can someone tell me what the first discussion question was? I don't have that on my sheet because I change my lesson sheets frequently. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so she had to convince her husband this is a good idea. That and we're not going to spend much time on it. Again, this is all speculation. We don't know how or if he required any convincing. But her idea is to put the baby in the river and just see what happens. That may have been a difficult conversation. Or it may have been that things were so bleak for their baby that this was really their last hope. Anybody want to offer an opinion on that one way or the other? So you think they intentionally put that baby in a place where the princess would find? It's possible. So you think they knew Pharaoh's daughter? Okay. Sandy? Right. Okay, Sandy points out that they knew God more than anything else, other circumstances, how this was going to play out, but they were willing to do what they could and let God do what he was going to do. And the Hebrews summary kind of talks about their faith in doing this. And it says they weren't afraid of the king's edict. Well, what do you mean they weren't afraid? How is it they weren't afraid of the king's edict? Clearly, they're trying to hide their son. If they weren't afraid of the king's edict, wouldn't they just left him out in the open and just say, we're going to trust God to save our son? They took action. I think when it says they were not afraid of the king's edict in the Hebrew passages, what it's saying is they feared God more than Pharaoh, and they were willing to do what they could to save their child, and they weren't concerned about getting caught. They were going to take action to save their son regardless of what the edict was. So let's move over to Julie. So let's move in, based on Julie's comment about how this is putting Miriam at risk. Let's talk about Miriam. It's the same story. We don't have to read anymore. Let's answer some questions about Miriam and see, is she really influential? Did she have a role that was important or not? So what was her relationship with Pharaoh's daughter? First box. What's that? I'm talking about Miriam now and Pharaoh's daughter. It's the next page of table. The relationship between the two? No relationship. Stranger. More than that, princess versus slave. So this is quite the contrast here. Would normally a slave have any influence at all on a princess? No, this is not the kind of relationship you would look to find someone who's being influential. Glenn? Right, yeah. Yeah, she didn't have, it wouldn't have been normal to be approached by a slave in this situation. So it was risky, for sure. Rolf? Name and the leper? Okay. So Rawl points out that in the case of Naaman, who got leprosy, he was influenced by a slave girl. She was a slave in his house, and that's why she had access to him. And he's speculating that perhaps that's what's happening here. The only reason Miriam was able to get this close is perhaps she's had some kind of household role. It's possible. We don't know. Again, that's a good conclusion. It's just something not revealed. Was the relationship between the two short-term or long-term? As it's revealed here, it's just a one-time thing. Now, there may have been a relationship because of slave, but we don't know. It seems like this is just something that occurred once. So I put down short-term. Overall result, positive or negative? Positive for Moses, positive for Pharaoh's daughter, positive for Miriam. Method of influence. How did she pull this off? Suggestion. That's what I put. It was a suggestion, but she had to be at the right place at the right time. It's funny, in our lives, sometimes big events happen and we don't know at the moment how big it really is. When she ran up to save her brother, she ended up doing much more. And that's really kind of one of the things I wanted to take from this series of lessons is the influence we have on people. We don't always know how big it's going to be. And here, it turned out big for world history. She was, and someone else brought this up, we don't know if she was told by her parents to watch from a distance, or she was just curious, or how this happened. But she was in the right place at the right time. And beyond that, she took action, which is, there's more to being influential than being at the right place at the right time. You have to actually step up, and she does. Impact of the influence. Moses saved, right? Hebrews are going to be led to freedom through this child, right? Was the influence a result of conscious effort? Yeah, clearly she was trying to convince Pharaoh's daughter here. Was it a part of a larger pattern? We don't think so. It doesn't seem like this is anything that's going to happen further, happened before. Was Pharaoh's daughter aware of the effort to influence? Well, I mean, she was asked directly, hey, can I do this? Can I go get a nurse for you? It wasn't a secret. It wasn't a trick. Very open. Yes, she was aware. Would Pharaoh's daughter have been better off or worse off without the influence? We just don't really know what would have happened without Miriam being there. It's hard to answer that one. Speculation here, what would have been the result of the situation without the influence? What if Miriam didn't run up? What would have been the result, if you're willing to speculate on that? Okay, probably so. The child probably would have been taken care of by an Egyptian wet nurse instead. That's about it. Probably as good as we can do, speculate there. If he was raised by an Egyptian, he may not have had that same loyalty to the Hebrews and to God. Takeaways here. What kind of takeaways do we take from Miriam? Okay. The role of faith here. Okay. Yeah. That's one of the things I put down here for a takeaway. Bravery, boldness, opportunistic. Those are all qualities that were demonstrated here. And what's most interesting, she was probably about 10 years old when this happened. So the other takeaway is, it doesn't matter how old you are. If you're active to do good, it can be really, really important. And so age doesn't matter in your influence. Or there may be a limit, I take that back, there may be limitations to how influential you can be, but there's still opportunities for influence for young people. Anyone else want to volunteer a takeaway? Okay, someone give me one of the discussion questions. Let's see if we have time for one discussion question here. Oh, okay, yeah. Was Miriam's role part of Jochebed's plan? What's the answer there? Nikki says probably. Anybody else? You could look at this two ways. You could look at this as part of the plan to save Moses was put him in the river and you keep an eye on him. And then at nightfall, you can bring him home. We'll do it all again tomorrow. That could have been what was going on here. It doesn't say. It could have been that he was put in a place where the princess would find him, and then you be ready to run up and have this discussion. That could have been the case. That's speculation. It could have been the case that she was the kind of sister who was just curious and wanted to see what would happen next, and was just kind of hanging around watching the basket. Again, speculation. We don't know. But in any case, she took action and she had influence here, and it was very, very impactful. Okay. Let's move to the last one because we're running out of time. We have about 10 minutes. And this one, Zipporah, Moses' wife. I'll give you some background. Hopefully you've done the reading, and we'll do our best with this one. So is the story of Moses and Zipporah a love story based on the information we have? Is this one of the great Bible love stories? Gail says no. Julie says, well, the fact that we don't know anything tells us it's not a classic love story because we just don't have information about them. How do Moses and Zipporah even meet? Okay, yeah, so when Moses is, he's found out, or Moses finds out that it's widely known that he's killed an Egyptian, and he leaves Egypt and he just goes into the wilderness. He ends up in Midian, thank you. While he's there, he comes to the well, and there's some dispute about who's going to water. And Moses essentially protects the daughters of Jethro, who's the high priest of Midian. And through that interaction, Jethro wants to do something for Moses. He brings him in, and he makes him one of his shepherds, and eventually he gives Moses Zipporah as his wife. That's really all we know. We don't have a lot of interactions between the two until we get to this certain story, which is really, really bizarre. So after 40 years in Midian, Moses gets the instructions from God via that burning bush encounter to go back and lead the people. And he starts to travel back to Egypt. And along the way, we have this encounter. So let's read it real quick because it's short. And then we'll see if we can get anything out of this. This is Exodus 4, verse 24. Now it came about at the lodging place on the way that the Lord met him and sought to put him to death. Then Zipporah took a flint and cut off her son's foreskin and threw it at Moses' feet. And she said, "You are indeed a bridegroom of blood to me." So he let him alone. At that time, she said, "You are a bridegroom of blood because of the circumcision." Okay, so that's the instance I wanted to discuss. And it's in here really because I wanted something to talk to the high school kids about that caught their attention. That being said, there is some discussion here, and it requires perhaps more speculation than we've even been doing previously, because we have this short little story and we don't have a lot of background and we don't have a lot of details. So someone explain to me what happened here. Anybody brave enough to summarize? Okay, Antia says Moses failed to circumcise one of his sons. And God came after who? God was going to kill Moses? Okay. I'm going to pick on you because you're brave enough to answer. Where did God tell him to circumcise his son? Okay. Mosaic law hasn't been given yet. So far, circumcision to this point is a covenant, is a sign of a covenant. It's not a law at this time. Okay, it has been carried down. That's right. So what we have here is God asking the descendants of Abraham to keep this covenant. It's not a law yet. Is it possible that God gave Moses some specific instructions about his sons that we don't have information on? It's possible. It's always possible. Clearly here, whatever's going on, the solution was to circumcise this son. That's fact. God was upset. God was going to kill somebody. And the solution was circumcising the son. Fact, Zipporah did the circumcision, and fact, she's not happy about it. That's the facts. Now, the rest of this is going to be speculation. Raul? What? We don't have it. Priest, right? Jethro was a priest. Okay, that's different than I was thinking, Raul. So Raul was thinking that even the Midianites involved circumcision. I didn't think so. I'll go back and check on that. You may be right. But I was thinking that the circumcision was really the Hebrews doing. And I'd further speculate that Moses not circumcising his son, speculation, was because of Zipporah's reluctance to. It doesn't say that. But the fact that she's so angry when she has to do it, to me, it's possible that she's irritated by this whole process. But that's speculation. Some accounts or some experts say that the one that God's about to kill here is not Moses, but it's the child. Others say God is angry and about to kill Pharaoh's son based on the two previous verses that talk about God's threat to kill Pharaoh's son. But then Zipporah's action makes no sense to me if that's the case. So there's a lot of dispute about what's happening here. But based on what the facts we have, we'll quickly run through these. Relationship with the influenced individual. We're talking about between Moses and Zipporah. This is husband and wife. Relationship between the two, long-term, short-term. They're husband and wife. This is a long-term relationship. Overall result of this situation, of the influence, was it positive or negative? Moses doesn't die, so that's positive. Positive. Method of influence. How did Zipporah exert influence here? Circumcision, forced circumcision, right? What? Her action. She took action. Okay. What's the impact of the influence? Yeah, Moses is spared, or Moses' son is spared, depending on how you read that. Was it a result of a conscious effort? Clearly, she was taking action. She was conscious of her efforts. Was it part of a larger pattern of influence? I wouldn't think this is something that's going to go on. I put no there. Was the other individual aware of the effort to influence? Yes. Would the other individual have been better off or worse off without the influence? Worse, if you're dead. So speculation here. What would have been the result of the situation without the influence? What if Zipporah didn't take action here? What would have happened? Someone would have died. It sounds like God's about to kill somebody. Now, why did Moses take action? Yeah, the process of circumcision is not a pleasant thing. And in fact, the eighth day is probably a good reason to do it then, if you're going to do it, instead of waiting until you're a teen or an adult. Okay? So you think maybe she did resist circumcision for her sons? So that's Antia's speculation is after circumcising the first, because only one son is talked about here, that she didn't care for the whole process and decided to prevent circumcision or to influence Moses not to circumcise. Okay, possible. Anyone got any takeaways from this strange incident? Glenn.
Very good.
Anybody else? We were out of time. We're a little bit past time. Moving on, we'll be working with stories that have a lot more solid foundation for discussion. I apologize if you speculate a little too much, but I think it's interesting to consider these and to do a little speculation just to consider difficulties of these characters back in these times. Okay, thank you all.